Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We did get an enormous amount done over most of this year from the workers' comp effort to transforming healthcare and education finance. Very significant accomplishments in creating a stem cell fund of $600+ million that will fund great research here in the state. False Claims Act and things that people don't pay attention to day to day that are critically important to moving us forward.
Governor Spitzer speaking on this program last month. The first year of the Spitzer administration is coming to a close. It's hardly the year that anyone expected it to be, is it? And politically, at least, a big disappointment to the governor. After a landslide election victory, remember his approval rating way, way up. He had 75-80% approval when he came into office. Well, the latest Siena poll is just 27%, lower than the approval rating of President Bush, mostly because of Troopergate and the illegal immigrant driver's licenses plan. Even just yesterday, the governor held what the Daily News Today describes as a tense news conference on the latest Troopergate developments. We'll play a clip. Those developments including subpoenas for records from the governor's office by the Albany DA, who had apparently concluded his investigation into the case, but now is subpoenaing the governor's office. But is the governor getting a bum rap from us, from the media? Too much coverage of his sensational failures and too little of his accomplishments. The new funding formula for the schools, expansion of health insurance, a property tax cut, and more. You heard the governor recite some of the list from our recent interview. What's really the big picture? We will talk in a few minutes to the Lieutenant Governor, David Patterson, but with us right now, Liz Benjamin, Daily News political reporter and blogger, and Wayne Barrett, senior editor, investigative reporter, columnist. What title doesn't he hold at the Village Voice? Hi, Liz. Hi, Wayne.
Hi.
Liz, react to that list that we heard from the governor. That was just from a recent interview the day after he walked away from the driver's licenses plan. And there is a case to be made that, hey, you know, this is interesting to people like you and me to keep talking about driver's licenses and keep talking about Troopergate, but there's all this whole other litany of policy change. Remember, everything changes on day one. This whole other litany of policy change that has, in fact, taken place this year. What do you think?
Well, to a certain extent, that's probably true. I mean, when the governor came in before all of these problems started, he did get an unusual amount of things accomplished. He had civil confinement for sex offenders. He had budget reform. He had, workers' compensation reform. And some of those things were things that had been long sort of stuck in Albany. But now the problem is because of the political atmosphere, other policy things are similarly stuck. And so you're back to a time when there is dysfunction and gridlock in Albany, and it's from caused by, in part, a person who said that dysfunction and gridlock were his enemies and he was going to end them.
Wayne Barrett, same question.
Well, Brian, I was disconnected for most of the introduction here, so I didn't even hear what the question was. I was sitting on the line, but couldn't hear it.
All right. Well, we had played a clip of the governor, and we're going to talk to the lieutenant governor in a minute, but we played a clip of the governor from this show last month where he went down a list of accomplishments and said, look, we've done a lot of things, you know, the funding formula for schools under the CFE case, the expansion of health insurance, a property tax cut, workman's comp reform, all these things. And so my question is, are we in the media giving the governor a bum rap by focusing so much on the driver's license plan failure and Troopergate when really a lot did change on day one as he promised or in this first year?
A bit of a bum rap. I mean, I certainly do think he's done more things than we give him credit for. I said this once before on your show. Who would believe, Brian, when we talked about this back in July, that we'd still be talking about Troopergate this long? It's just been one of the most dismaying things that's ever happened on my beat, that such what I regard as a minor scandal. I mean, all it is a perjury trap. Maybe somebody fell for the perjury trap. But to see this thing become such a roadblock to reform, which I think this was the most serious governor we've had in my lifetime about reforming Albany, and to see this trivial matter become such an obstacle to any real progress in Albany, I think it's just exactly what Joe Bruno wanted. Shelley Silver may have even wanted it a bit, because certainly these are the stalwarts that defend the status quo, and so there's been a minimal amount of the reform that we expected, but I do think the governor has managed to achieve a few things before Troopergate even started. I don't know how many on that list would have occurred before July, but I think it'd be a fairly substantial number.
That's probably right. And Liz and Wayne, hold on for a few minutes, because we now have Lieutenant Governor David Patterson on the line with us for a few minutes to talk about the first year as he sees it. Lieutenant Governor, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian.
So in your own estimation, how have you and the governor done serving the people of New York in year one?
Well, I think Liz and Wayne laid out a number of issues, and I don't want to go through a shopping list of achievements, but maybe just to set a tone, I would say that the workers' compensation issue, where we've cut the premiums for employers by 20% and have now raised the benefits for victims and also have a cost of living allotment, so it's not a political football in Albany, has saved $1.2 billion for businesses in the state, and it's just approaching the end of its first year of existence. So this had been something that had been ballyhooed around Albany since 1992. Now, the Second Avenue subway, that was first introduced in 1929. This is the fourth time somebody said they were going to build a Second Avenue subway. But everybody's confident that this plan that the governor's brought forth is effective. So there really have been some remarkable issues that the governor has taken on. I mean, I remember the day after Election Day, I would have thought we'd been at breakfast celebrating. The governor's got me down in the Attorney General's office where he was then, meeting with Dennis Hughes and Ken Adams from the Business Council. Dennis Hughes is AFL-CIO, talking about how to fix workers' compensation. Now, what I would compare it to is exercise, Brian. You know, you can work out in the gym, you can get in great shape, and one little thing can go wrong, and then you've sprained your ankle and you can't do anything for 3 or 4 weeks. And I think we're going through that period where, we were trying to address the federal vacuum on immigration, and we tried. We really felt this was a right way to bring undocumented immigrants out of the shadows. And the public doesn't feel that way, and we hear the public. Then, you know, with regard to Troopergate, it's just, for some reason, an inexorable process. We can't just seem to get all the issues out, and we're confident that when we do, everything will be all right.
Well,
but the point that Wayne made is right, that it has curtailed a lot of other activity at the same time.
Right, and Liz made the same point, too, that a lot of those accomplishments that the governor listed in that clip, and I'm looking at his op-ed in the New York Times from July when Troopergate was breaking out. A lot of those, of course, are from the period before that, and now there seems to be this kind of gridlock as the governor has alienated Joe Bruno in the state Senate. Let me go back to that op-ed in July a little bit, called An Apology from Albany, where the governor said, "I have apologized to Joe Bruno, the Senate Majority Leader, and now I want to apologize to all New Yorkers." But he went on to say, "The worst thing that could happen now would be for this to stop our progress, preventing us from building on our many successes of the past 6 months." And the list that he wrote at that time was health insurance for every child, historic investment in our schools tied to accountability, the largest property tax cut in history, ethics, lobbying, and campaign finance reform, breaking the impasse at ground zero, and a 20% cut in workers' comp that you were just talking about. Let me just fact check a few of those things. He wrote health insurance for every child. Do we have that in New York State now?
Well, we would have. We had a bipartisan consent to basically take 400,000 children off the uninsured rolls. But as you well know, Brian, there was a letter on September the 17th from the federal government saying that they weren't going to go along with that. And then,
Oh, that's the S-CHIP program.
That's the S-CHIP program. That would have provided the resources for that. So it was a victory within the state, and the federal government came in and basically dampened. But right now, let me just tell you, the governor has his own task force looking into the ways we can work around the federal government issue. So we're still hopeful that we can put this together, but it would be already done now had that not occurred.
And the largest property tax cut in history, would you claim that?
The largest property tax cut in history will be that at the end of the three-year process. 1.3 $5 billion this year, and then inevitably capping out at a total of $6 billion over 3 years.
All right. Now, on Trooper Gate.
And on one other thing, Brian, on the schools. Now, I think this is fascinating. We're still operating under the agrarian school calendar from like 1880, where the children went home to work the farms. And now, teenage pregnancy, crime, all problems that young people have occur between the hours of 3 to 7 p.m. In the governor's contracts for excellence, where 55 school districts will get additional funding because they're low performing, but it's tied to certain encumbrances that they have to endure to receive the money. In Rochester, they now have a 6-day school week, and in some of the districts, and in Buffalo, they're extending the school day to 6 p.m. in some of the districts. So this is the beginning of a new paradigm for education. So again, muffled behind this problem, and you can ask me about Trooper Gate, it's okay,
mm-hmm.
but muffled behind this problem are these great achievements that hopefully over time will be realized.
Lieutenant Governor David Patterson with me on WNYC. I'm trying to figure out what the administration's position is on Trooper Gate right now, because, again, from that op-ed apology in the Times July 29th, he wrote, "I have apologized to Joe Bruno, the Senate Majority Leader, and I now want to apologize to all New Yorkers. What you've been reading about in the papers and watching on television this week is not what we are about. It represents just the opposite. On my first day in office, I brought my staff together and told them what our guiding principles must be. First, we're going to fight for what we believe in, and second, we're going to maintain the highest ethical standards while doing it. Over the past few weeks, two members of my administration forgot that second principle." So that was a pretty out-and-out apology. But when the governor came on with us here last month and I raised the issue of Trooper Gate, he seemed to say, or at least imply, that the administration had nothing to apologize for. Listen to this exchange. "Do you think your administration has contributed to hyperpartisanship by going after Senator Bruno on his helicopter use?"
You know, we haven't. I guess I would challenge the premise. I'm not sure we have gone after anybody. We just haven't done that. That hasn't been our.
Well, somebody did, right?
Somebody did, but it wasn't me. It wasn't us. And so, you know, I think there were news articles that. The Times Union ran about the stuff that they but you know that's again completely ancillary to anything I care about.
Planted from high level officials in your administration? No.
No, actually, those articles, I think, if I remember, came from a FOIL request they served on somebody after a report came out. Beats me, and it's not stuff I really care about.
So, Lieutenant Governor, what is the administration's position on Trooper Gate? Was it something to apologize for, or just an Albany Times Union story?
Well, the governor did apologize for it. He apologized for it in that op-ed piece that you referred to. And then on August 7th, he spoke in Chautauqua about what happens when righteousness becomes self-righteousness. So there were missteps made and egregious errors made by members of the administration.
But he seemed to say there that members of the administration did not plant the story in the Albany Times Union. Is that the administration's position today?
If the governor said it, it's administration's position today. I mean, he said it on your show, and you know that's how we feel. But I think what's important is that the governor, I think, if I were going to listen to that and which is what you're asking me to do, and compare it to what he said back in July,
right.
I think the governor was very forthright. He could have just stood there and said, I've gotten the Attorney General's report, I'm going to look into it, and then sit back for a couple of weeks like an expedient politician and see how it was playing in the press and then decide how far he was going to go. The governor has always been someone who is very forthright. He wants to address situations when they come up. He doesn't like dust to settle under an issue, which is...
But wait, everybody says he could... But the critics say he could address this situation and stop the dust from settling by testifying under oath, by complying with the Albany DA's subpoenas, by just getting everything out there, and then if he really has nothing to hide, get it over with.
Okay. Let me just comment on your original question, then I'll go to your second question.
Okay.
And that is... On the original question, I think there was some frustration that the governor came right out. He sanctioned employees as the attorney general suggested. He apologized. He was forthright. He went on to apologize several more times. And it seemed that it only became a prelude to more criticism. And what I would say, you know, vis-a-vis the investigation is, I don't know the answers there. I've never really known anything about Troopergate, and I can't really comment on the ongoing investigation or our response. One thing the governor did, just so you can get a little snapshot of who he is personally, I always stand next to him at the press conferences. He said to me, since you never knew anything about this, I don't really want you to stand here. There are a lot of people you would work with who would throw everyone under the bus. He stood up and he discussed it himself. So I've tried not to comment on issues that, frankly, Brian, I come on the show all the time.
Right.
I answer your questions. I really don't know the answer to that question.
And you've been coming on here since you were a lowly state senator from Manhattan. But this could, before you go, two political questions. This could basically all be put to rest by the voters next November if they elect a Democratic majority to your old body, the state Senate, and sweep Joe Bruno out of power. Then probably the investigation goes away unless there is an independent criminal investigation, and the gridlock goes away. You're just a few seats away from that. You think that could happen?
I think that could happen. That was obviously my dream when I became the minority leader. We took four seats away from Joe Bruno in 4 years, and then after Deputy Secretary Balboni came with us, we won that seat, so that was a fifth seat. So the trend is definitely working in our favor.
Do you want to make a case right now to people in Republican New York State Senate districts that they should elect Democrats in 2008?
I think that, oddly enough, either party in control of the Senate and the Assembly would reform the whole structure of New York State's government. Since the Democrats are the closest, I suggest that they vote for a Democrat. The problem in Albany was always what I call the incumbency party, where the two parties were working together, and the budgets came later, and the benefits came fewer. I think if one party was actually in control of both houses and the legislature in Albany, even my Republican colleagues, though I would disagree with what they did, would reform the process. And the Democrats, particularly the Senate Democrats, have been arguing for reform in that area all along.
And one last quick political thing. If Hillary Clinton is elected president of the United States, people say you might be in line to be appointed by the governor, U.S. Senator from New York. Are you interested in that?
Brian, I am sure that when Katie Couric steps down from CBS News and they ask Brian Lehrer to do the evening news on CBS, that you'll take it.
Not in that chain of command.
It's a wonderful, wonderful office. There are probably about 200 individuals, legislators, and even non-government officials that would like to be New York's U.S. Senator. And I suggest that any of them who spends any time campaigning for something that is so far in the future and has so many other circumstantial incidents that have to fall into place, anyone who wastes any time on that is cheating the taxpayers out of their dollar.
I will take that as the most colorful no comment I will get this week. New York State
you.
Lieutenant Governor David Patterson, thank you very much.
Yes, and say hi to Liz and Wayne for me.
I will, and we'll get back to Liz Benjamin from the Daily News and Wayne Barrett from the Village Voice. And your calls, what do you think of the first year of the Spitzer administration? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show for our comments page.
Obviously, we are cooperating fully. Take it very seriously. Wish it were getting to conclusion quickly so we could move on.
Governor Spitzer from a contentious news conference in Albany yesterday that was supposed to be about higher education reform but turned into a grilling on Troopergate. We'll play a little more of that in a minute. As joining us again now are Liz Benjamin, blogger and political columnist for the Daily News, and Village Voice columnist and senior editor Wayne Barrett. Liz, anything to react to there in the comments from the Lieutenant Governor David Patterson?
Well, there was a lot, but one thing that struck me was this discussion about education and the historic gains that were made in education last year. I mean, you know, one thing that's on the table as we're moving forward in a difficult budget year with $4.3 billion gap is the possibility that the CFE settlement, which was one of the governor's most highly touted accomplishments, will be stretched out over 5 years or more instead of four. So what I'm saying is a lot of these things that were done now, and including property tax breaks, you know, I don't know where the money's going to come from. And you could be in a situation where some things are going to have to be delayed or even undone, or sort of diminished to some degree because the state just can't afford it.
So you're saying this is a changing fiscal situation. You're not saying this is political gridlock, the result of Troopergate, that's going to diminish these accomplishments.
Well, I'm just saying that that's one additional aspect. I mean, even if all things were perfect politically for the governor, you're having a situation where fiscally, things are not so perfect, and that's one added problem here that comes on top of the whole pile of problems that already exists.
Wayne Barrett, I don't know if I was just picking at hairs there, but the difference between the governor apologizing in July and then coming on here last month and saying, no, nobody in my administration planted a story with the Albany Times Union, that was just the media doing its job independently. What was that about?
Well, you know, maybe the governor's listening to me. That's a joke, but I actually wrote a
You've
story.
You've been a bigger defender of the governor than the governor.
Right. I've actually written a story saying, what the heck is he apologizing for? And, you know, the New York Times editorial page recently, just in the last couple of days, published an editorial that also suggests it agrees with me. What is he apologizing for? I mean, Liz is the one who's covering this on a day-to-day basis up there. I'm sort of in Giuliani land at the moment. But Jacob Gershman in The Sun wrote that this is what is supposedly under investigation now. Now, Liz can add whatever she knows, and I know she knows a great deal more about it than I do. But this is what Gershman wrote in The Sun, where supposedly Darren Dopp, in this two-paragraph statement that he submitted to Andrew Cuomo, says, I regret any appearance of impropriety that was created by the manner in which this information about the helicopter used by Bruno was sought and obtained. And what Gershman writes is, Mr. Dopp is alleged to have contradicted that statement by later telling ethics officials that he didn't see anything improper with the way in which he gathered the records and released them to the press. So supposedly, the perjury investigation that Suarez is now conducting, maybe Liz knows more than Gershman, but supposedly what the thrust of this investigation is whether or not Darren Dopp thought what he did was wrong or not. That's the perjury investigation.
No, I don't know necessarily
on.
It's that he thought what he did was wrong, Wayne. It's that he stated one thing and then subsequently testified under oath to another. And I think the bigger issue that the DA is trying to get at is whether or not people pressured him to state one thing, and then subsequently he told the truth in another locale.
Do you think that the government of the state of New York should come to a halt because Darren Dopp expressed regrets about things that he didn't feel truthfully regretful about?
No, I do not, Wayne. I don't. But I do think that the problem here is that if everybody had just come clean and stood up at the beginning in July, and just said, yep, we did this, we made a mistake, instead of being completely unable to admit to what they did, which everyone says was not criminal.
But
I think David Paterson just said that that's exactly what the governor thought he did. He disciplined people. I think appropriately there was certainly some screw-ups here. I don't think it was anything like, I mean, it was originally presented as a spy master case. The state police have been sicked on Senator Bruno to act as if they're spies. Everything that the original accusers, and you certainly weren't the original accuser, we know that Freddie Dicker and the New York Post live for this story. They live for it every day. Why? Because it can retain the Republican majority in the Senate. It's clearly a politically driven thing at the New York Post. I'm not suggesting in any way that it's politically driven when you cover it, but it's clearly politically driven by them, and they've been driving this thing.
But here's how far they drove it. And Liz, I think you broke the story in the Daily News yesterday about these new subpoenas from the Albany DA, David Soares. I thought Soares issued this whole big report previously and held a news conference to say not only were no laws broken, but that the media was too overheated about the story. Now all of a sudden he's issuing subpoenas to Spitzer's office. What's this about?
Well, what this is about is, I mean, before we even get here, I agree with Wayne on one key point, which is the Spitzer administration got completely outspun. Completely outspun. I mean, one could argue that what this started as was a botched PR effort, right? But the problem is, and then subsequently heated up to an enormous degree by the Senate Republicans and Joe Bruno, who accused people of spying on him, misusing state resources to spy on him. Okay, but now what we're talking about is, and none of that was criminal, and everyone agrees, et cetera, it was badly handled, et cetera. But the problem is now what we're talking about is the great lengths to which people went to try and preserve a public reputation and a potential criminality in lying about what you did that at the outset wasn't criminal.
So what the Daily News described as a tense news conference for the governor yesterday took place. You know, we had the governor's liaison to the Higher Education Study Commission yesterday morning. That's what the governor wanted to be talking about, the new proposals for SUNY and CUNY. Instead, when he got in front of reporters, it wound up in answers like this.
Look, I've answered all these questions at length, and obviously we are cooperating fully. Take it very seriously. Wish it were getting to conclusion quickly so we could move on. Today we're talking about higher ed, which is something that is enormously important for the future of the state. And we just sit and wait, and it is their job to do what they have to do. It is our job and my job to cooperate, which is exactly what I've done. I've answered all the questions over and over. Will not hesitate to answer them in time, and obviously when the Ethics Commission says it is ready to move forward, I'm thrilled and look forward to doing that, and have said that over and over again.
So, Liz Benjamin, why doesn't he just testify under oath and turn over whatever records if he's got nothing to hide?
Well, he says that he hasn't been asked. It's true that he talked to SOAR's before the original report.
The Albany DA.
Right, but he wasn't put under oath. In fact, the DA put no one under oath, and much to the chagrin of the Senate Republicans. Subsequently, you have the Public Integrity Commission, which was doing its own ethics probe. And remember, the Public Integrity Commission was the body, well, its prior incarnation, the Ethics Commission, was the body that touched off the storm that ended up bumping Alan Hevesy out of office. They all but halted their investigation by turning over alleged perjury information on former communications director Darren Dopp to the DA, and now the DA is doing his probe and hasn't subpoenaed anyone yet.
Right. You know, thinking back to the governor's answer on this program compared to the apology that he gave in the summer, it seems like from what you guys said, Wayne, that maybe the governor is now lining up his new answer to match Darren Dopp's new answer, his former communications director. Dopp's the one who's under investigation for perjury, for at first saying he did something wrong, and then maybe saying he didn't do anything wrong. Now we have the governor in a parallel situation, saying in July that he did something wrong, or his aides did, and now saying that they didn't do anything wrong. Do you think the governor was trying to align his position with Dopp's latest position?
Doesn't it all sound absurd, Brian, that we're actually talking about, whether or not should bring the state government to a halt?
There is a
perjury
investigation.
Because Darren Dopp changed his
mind
about
asking,
whether or not he did something wrong.
I'm just
not
asking a question about
matter,
a perjury investigation.
But his feelings about it. Well, look, we have, Freddie Dicker's story this morning cites a lawyer close to the probe. I don't even know what a lawyer close to the probe is. It's clearly not somebody from Soares' office, or it would say a law enforcement official. So we're basing discussions based on Dicker copy, which is the most politically driven copy you could find in the state of New York.
I didn't even read Fred Dicker
sources,
today.
Well, that's,
read the
that's
daily,
the story.
Read the Daily News.
That's the story that's on Liz's
Thanks,
blog
Brian.
This morning. And so all I'm saying is, can we possibly look at the complete imbalance of this coverage? Andrew Cuomo, it now appears, took two unsworn statements from Rich Baum and Darren Dopp. They were unsworn, just notarized statements. Now, they complained months ago to me about this. When I sat down with Cuomo's people, they bitterly complained that these were not sworn statements. So we have no prior sworn statement from Darren Dopp that could lead to a perjury indictment. Why is nobody attacking Andrew Cuomo for taking unsworn statements? First, he agreed to not take their testimony. Now we have learned he agreed to take statements that weren't even sworn.
Well, wait a minute.
Why is it that the press isn't looking at how Andrew Cuomo blew this investigation? Because he's everybody's source?
No, the statements were stamped. I can say to you that Andrew Cuomo is not calling me every day, Wayne. I promise you that.
Well, we know who he is calling, Liz.
Listen, the issue regarding the statements is a little bit up in the air because they are stamped with something that says, you know, sworn to me and notarized by. And there are laws regarding notary.
It is not up in the air as far as Andrew Cuomo's office is concerned. I sat with them for 4 or 5 hours. This was months ago, before the story appeared that they were unsworn statements. They bitterly denounced them to me as unsworn statements.
Right.
They said all they are is notarized.
We just have a few minutes left with Liz Benjamin, political blogger and columnist for the Daily News, and Wayne Barrett, Village Voice columnist. And let's get a few phone calls in. Then, by the way, we're going to talk about a new survey asking if people would marry for money. And that could lead to a bribery investigation after this perjury investigation. But you'll be surprised at who said yes. Jean in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jean.
Oh, hi. I'd like to read to you a little
email
I sent to Bruno. It's very short.
It better be short.
Yes. You may have justification to be peeved at the Trooper Kate issue, but your continuing pursuit of this issue is shameful. It's obvious that you are trying to obstruct changes which are badly due at the expense of the people of New York.
Jean, thank you. Liza in Croton-on-Hudson, you're on WNYC. Hi, Liza.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to put a good word in for Spitzer overall. I haven't been following Troopergate really very much at all. I think it's really boring, and I think that he's been doing a great job putting forward ideas at the state level for innovative change in government, and I'm totally behind him for a long time.
Alex in Park Slope, you're on WNYC. Hi, Alex.
Hi. I think the point is moot. I was first going to make about how there is a problem with bias and unfairness that whom I call the plaintiff gets to speak first and doesn't get a rebuttal. So he did get a rebuttal, and I can't wait to hear what Wayne Barrett has to say. But the other point I want to make is the previous caller. It is so petty, but I think that also in a case like that, perhaps the accusers should be put under oath and asked if it is politically motivated. If they say no, well, I think that it can be investigated concretely, tangibly.
Thank you very much. We're almost out of time. I want to ask you both the same political question that I asked David Paterson, not about whether he wants the U.S. Senate seat if Hillary is elected president, but this could all end on Election Day. And I could see a very likely scenario where it will all end on Election Day, no matter how it drags on in court or in investigations or how much it gridlocks the legislature on policy next year, because presumably there will be a big Democratic turnout in New York next November because of the presidential race, and the state Senate could well lose its slim Republican majority, and then it's bye-bye Bruno regardless of people's judgments about the governor. Think that's likely, Liz Benjamin?
Do I think it's likely? I think it depends on a lot of things. There are difficult races all over the state. It is possible. I do not know whether I would go as far as to say it's likely, because Bruno has some very powerful friends, including the unions, and not the least of which is 1199.
Wayne?
Well, it's going to depend on whether or not the press starts being as vigilant in covering Joe Bruno as they are in looking at every nuance that comes out of Elliot Spitzer's mouth.
And there are
Joe
investigations.
Bruno has a press conference after the New York Times reveals that the very unions, not 1199, but the very unions that Liz Benjamin was talking about, have had indirectly Joe Bruno on the payroll for years. This is a man who has a press conference and refuses to answer a single question
mm-hmm.
about it. Totally dismisses the press corps, and it's a one-day story.
And it seems
it
to me, Liz,
it works when he does it.
So last question. Doesn't that scenario of the large Democratic turnout, the vulnerability of Bruno to having his whole majority turned out, doesn't that scenario put a lot of pressure on Bruno not to stall everything that the governor wants in the state Senate next year? Because then he'll be blamed for gridlock, too.
Well, I think the argument that's going to be made by the Senate, and you know, certainly there are political scientists who agree with this, is that they are the last bastion between balanced government and single-party government, which we saw in Washington was not the most fantastic thing.
Liz Benjamin, political blogger and columnist for the Daily News. Wayne Barrett, senior editor, investigative reporter, columnist for the Village Voice. Thanks for coming on with us, as always.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up, would you marry for money? We'll find out who would. Stay with us.